a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. This is Manna.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Manna podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. I'm your host, Jeff Peterson. Now, none of the guys that you're going to meet on this podcast would consider themselves to be extraordinary, but it's their humble, holy way of living. That's exactly what makes them extra. And I am excited for you to meet them. Now, if you are still listening to this pedestrian little podcast now in its 13th season, first of all, thank you. But you're either, if you're still listening, you're either my mom or you are at least a little bit faith curious. Okay. And you've probably heard the saying that our God is a God of second chances, which speaks to the unwavering, kind of unfathomable, very unconditional mercy that God has for us and asks us to extend to others. And even if you don't, you know, walk around citing scripture all the time, you're no doubt familiar with the stories from the Bible of lots of infamous second chances and second chance stories, like Cain, you know, the brother who, the guy who killed his brother, guys like Samson, David, the parable of the prodigal son, very, very famously, and maybe most notably, Peter, the rock, you know, the disciple whom Jesus built his church upon, who, you know, as we all know Peter's story, he made a habit of screwing up quite a bit, in addition to denying Jesus, you know, three times, which is not, that's not nothing. So our God is not just a God of second chances, but a God of another chance, you know, and another, and thankfully for all of us, another. Well, today's guest has had the experience, the intelligence, the initiative, and the grace to take all of the additional chances that God has given him to not only turn his own life around, but to help others do the same. A former practicing attorney and compulsive gambler who served 5 years in a federal correctional institution for armed bank robbery. How about that? Today's guest not only turned his life around vocationally, serving as a teacher and a pastor for 32 years before just recently retiring, but he also turned that life around physically after battling both prostate cancer and a spinal correction in surgery. And he's channeled all of these second and third and fourth chances into three books, myriad speaking engagements, and his Deal By Me podcast, which seeks to, I'm quoting here, transform lives by encouraging and inspiring. And even the best lawyer can't argue with that kind of a mission. Most importantly, he's a devoted husband, father of two, and a brother among us who truly believes in another chance, which is very good news for all of us. Please welcome today's man of man, Dr. James Smith. Hey, James.
Hello, how are you?
Very, very, very well, and very honored to have you on the big show. I just, as we were just talking before, before tape rolled, I love your story. It's inspiring, and I haven't even heard the details of the story. And so, first things first, and I don't want to make light of it here, but I have to say, James, of the over 150 now guests that we've had on Manna, you are our first known bank robber. Okay, we've never had a bank robber on the show, and so kind of getting some Jesse James vibes here, and we'll get to the deep backstory in a second. But I have to imagine when I read that about you in your intro, a lot of people's ears perked up. So maybe take us back. Well, let's start our conversation here a little bit in the dark, and then we'll get to the light. So maybe if you can start and take us back to that time where you found yourself, what led to that, and we'll sort of take the wonderful story that it turned into from there.
Well, let me begin by first of all saying thanks for having me on, and to just let you know that I do appreciate the way you have introduced this by not just talking about a second chance, but another chance. I like the another chance, because all of us probably have more than one time that we're messed up. Some of us more than once, twice, three times. But the most important thing is that we finally get to where the Lord wants us to be. Yeah. So I to just tell you a little bit about myself. I was a country lawyer who robbed a bank, and as you said, received a 15-year sentence, which I served 5 years in the Federal Correction Institution. Now, how I got there, is kind of pretty interesting. I started practicing law in 1971, and of course, after practicing law, a couple of lawyers, bondsmen, I guess you would call barbers, professional folk within the area, was, you know, all of us were playing a little poker. I learned how to play it after meeting these guys who were older than I was, but I was enjoying it. We was having such a great time, leaving out every Friday, going to some poker game in different counties. We had a little circle where we'll go from city to city. And of course, I was having fun, was really enjoying it. And found myself at first winning money, enjoying it, borrowing money when I lost from other lawyers and paying them back, and they doing the same. But eventually it got to a point where my love for the game overpowered my sense. I like to put it that way. And I started going downhill, and I think I got a little depressed, and decided, that I was to a point where I didn't know where I was going to go. So I got up one morning and just reached over into my dresser drawer and pulled out a 22 caliber pistol that I had gotten earlier when I first got married to my first wife. Went to my law office, and I sat there and was actually contemplating committing, taking my life. Oh. But I think it was my mom who was my only child to a single mom, and I just thought about, how devastating this would be. So I kind of left, riding down the road, 85, still thinking about stopping in front of a big transfer truck and just destroying myself. But it was my mom that kind of kept coming through my mind. And so I ended up at a restaurant eating in a town about 10 miles from the town that I was practicing law in. And I just looked out of the window, and there was the CCB bank at the time. And my mind started roaming, where can I get, some money? And at the time, I'm saying if I get my hand on about $50,000, I could go pay off all my debts, and, I could get back to the law practice like nothing happened. So it was a crazy thing. I rode around town for a while. And then all of a sudden, I just said, hey, with it, get caught or not. Pull up to the bank, went in, did this crazy thing, and that's what happened.
Well, and I can imagine, I mean, first of all, that's so sad, and thank you so much for sharing that story of just being so vulnerable. I mean, I'm sure that day, if it started with you reaching for that pistol with the intent potentially of taking your own life, coming off of that and then looking at, you know, walking into the bank, that's way better, you know, it's on the continuum of things. I mean, I'm sure there was a bit of, I don't know, at least it wasn't as desperate, as sad, as tragic as that could have, as it could have worked out. So how, and it sounds like, and I love how you talked about your mom. It sounds like then, you know, it really was, a result of this gambling addiction and the kind of the disease really of any addiction is what it is. And so versus any kind of like upbringing, you know, it sounds like you had the influence of your mom, being raised there. I mean, it's not like you led a life. I mean, you were a lawyer for goodness sake. I mean, so it's not like you had an upbringing of a lot of, you know, dereliction and deviance and stuff like that. What was your childhood like growing up in the country there?
Oh well, my childhood was great. I grew up in a family. I'm the only child, of course, but I had lots of aunts, uncles. My granddaddy, we owned about 500 acres of land, so we were all very, very close. So went off to college and law school, you know, as an only child. You know, my mom just supported all my needs, whatever I needed. So I grew up, you know, just like a normal person. Had every, you know, mom was very supportive. And, you know, let me kind of share this with you because I think this is important. You know, everyone, including myself, concluded that I had become a compulsive gambler. Mm-hmm. And in my first book that I wrote, which was more of a memoir, Deal by Me, A Golden Opportunity Blown, the title suggests what I was saying, you know, no more, don't want any more, you know, playing poker, deal by me. And of course, obviously, a golden opportunity blown was the loss of my law practice. So that's the kind of the title. But however, you know, sometimes after that passed, I began to reflect on my past. And obviously, I did a self-evaluation of my own life that I share in my second book, and I call it the second edition of Deal by Me, a Self-Evaluation. Now, how I got here, I asked to come to speak to a Gambling Anonymous class, and the director of the class asked me if I was still a compulsive gambler, and I told him no, that I was finished. And that was the honest truth, you know. Since this happened to me in 1981, I not gamble at all, you know, no more poker. All those little habits I had left me, didn't care about them at all. So he said to me, he said, well, I'm not sure if the guys would be interested in hearing from you because we believe that once a compulsive gambler, always a compulsive gambler. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew that was not me. So as I did my second book, I started trying to take a self-evaluation. And so I came to the conclusion that I was not a compulsive gambler, but rather I was afraid to fail. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. And I think all of that was a combination of my life story, the first African-American lawyer to practice law in my hometown, the youngest African-American lawyer at the time to practice law in the state of North Carolina. And so that kind of arrogancy, I think, kind of got next a little bit of me. And I just had gotten to the point that I think I, rather than accept failure, I tried to reach out and I did something very stupid. So I think that was it more than anything else. Because I, you know, like I said, I had become this well-known, successful lawyer who found himself losing everything he had accomplished. And I didn't feel that I was, could accept that. And I think that was part of my problem.
Yeah. How much of that, because today and on your own podcast and in your writings, I mean, you speak so confidently about faith and God and you know, you hear a lot of stories of people who go through these very, you know, dark times of trial or adversity. And that's when, you know, they find God or they mm-hmm. have this sort of, you know, rebirth. How has faith been a part of this journey for you? Was it something that was actually, it's been there the whole time, and it just, you were able to lean on it during this period of reflection and coming out of it? And then, or was there a little bit of a kind of an epiphany during that dark time where you're like, okay, I need something and it's going to be God?
No, I can easily answer that question. I've always had it. My mother was a committed Christian. I was always in church. We went to church. I was, you know, I might want to say I was, as a matter of fact, this got interesting because I'm preaching on this subject on this coming Sunday. I was probably religious, but not spiritual. Okay, if you understand. Okay, if you understand where I'm coming from. So yeah. I that was where I was, but faith was always there. But what happened after this, it happened to me, and I was charged. I was sent to the mental hospital, and I think you can see why that's obvious. The DA, lawyers, everybody obviously thought I had a mental breakdown because sure. who would do such thing? Mm-hmm. And it was at the mental hospital when I was spending. I had a 6 week observation. Of course, I spent 3 weeks. It was there when I just began to reflect on everything. How did I get to where? How did I get here? You know, what was it that made me do what I did? And it was from this, I think, my faith kind of kicked in, and I got to the point where I said to myself, anything that caused me to get here, I'm finished with it. And I relied on my faith to take me through. And I said, from here on out, this is it. Yeah. And of course, I knew I was going to be okay. I was ready to accept what happened to me. I pled guilty. I went in. I spent my 5 years, no trouble whatsoever, a model inmate, even got the chance to go outside of the confinement twice to attend seminars with prison fellowship. So my life was great. I knew I had messed up. I wanted to get it all behind me, and I just wanted to come out and get my life going. And that's what I did.
Oh, that's just wonderful. And you know, when you said earlier, James, that after, upon that reflection, it was less about some kind of addiction or disease, and it was really maybe more of this self-imposed expectation that you put on yourself that you were afraid to fail, like you couldn't fail.
Yeah.
And when you said that, I feel like, and you know, this podcast, you know, we talk, it's, I mean, women listen as well, but it, you know, it's designed for men. It's designed for all of us to hear stories like yours so that we can get better ourselves about being vulnerable and being less afraid to fail and whatever. And so I'm wondering, with the work then that you've done since, and particularly with men, how has your personal story and your sort of wrestling with this fear of failure. How is it helping you? I would imagine it's a very, you've got a lot of empathy, for other men who you're working with in helping them also, sort of just be less fearful of that. How do you help other guys get to the place where you got to?
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting how I've done it. When I first came out, I worked with Prison Fellowship. As a matter of fact, I became a Prison Fellowship instructor. So I travel, taught seminars at the death row at the here in North Carolina. I've traveled out to Kansas doing it. You know, I was went all over because I was working with Prison Fellowship, but also during the same time I had gone back to seminary, and I received my master's of divinity degree, and then I was called to pastor, and as a result, my pastoring, you know, was my opportunity to also share more of what I had gone through, and hopefully through my ministry, this could help. So it was a combination of things that kind of, you know, kept me sharing my faith, and I even do it now. And this has been, you know, I came out in 1986, so that's been quite some time. And so even today, you know, even though I retired from my church of 32 years, I was out 6 months in my home church. I lost her pastor, and I am now serving as an interim pastor where I've been there now for 1 year, this month, as a matter of fact, working with them. And I still share it just to this day, you know, if it's a text, and most texts, you know this, you know, somebody has fallen, you know, somebody has done some stuff they got no business doing, but somehow, you know, they've given another chance, and you know, I look at the Paul, you named a whole lot of them, and so I take that opportunity to kind of say, and I understand that because I've been there, and this is what you got to do, you know, this kind of thing. So it's been my life story, and I don't mind sharing it. I've had some people say, why do you share it? But every time I share it, there's somebody who always will come up to me afterwards and say, "You really helped me."
I love it so much, and I for one, although I don't think I'm the only one, I'm glad that I'm glad you're not a good retired person, James. I'm glad that you're almost 30 years into this now, and I don't think you're going to stop anytime soon. It's just it's wonderful work, and again, I think that using what, you know, what is that? I know you mentioned Paul, and I think he said something about, you know, what man intended for evil, God used for good. And yeah. I think what you're doing is taking exactly that chance, those second, third, and fourth chances, and helping all of us realize that we're not defined by those, by those trip ups. So, so we are at the final segment of the show here, James. And I'm realizing now I usually let our guests know about what we call the fun segment here. And I don't think I told you this. So this will be a little bit of we're going to keep you on your toes here, James, for the last three questions. So I ask the same three questions of every guest. Everybody's ever been on Manna has got the same three questions. And so now we have this catalog of answers, from all these guys. And so, but they're really quick and they're very, don't worry. You won't have to remember anything back from the bar exam or anything like that. These are not difficult questions at all, but they're kind of fun way to end. So fun segment question number one, if Jesus knocked on your door tomorrow morning and just wanted to hang out with you for the day. Okay. You got a whole day with you and Jesus. You can do anything you want. You can go anywhere you want. But you got all the time. It is the one full day with Jesus. What are you going to do with him?
Oh, wow. I would love to eat at his table.
Yeah.
That's why. I love to tell him that I appreciate him giving me another chance and forgiving me for what I did. And I would just tell him how much I appreciate what he did for me.
Yeah.
And we could just sit down and just have a good conversation.
Yeah.
Hopefully at his table, and I'll be satisfied.
Amen to that. Doesn't have to be any more than that. All right, fun segment question number two. If you could go to church with any other man, living or dead, famous or not famous, you could have known this person or not, could have been a celebrity or could have been a guy down the road. But the only two rules are you're going to go to church and you're going to go with another guy. Who are you going to church with?
Oh, wow. That's a very interesting one. I always think about my granddaddy. He was amazing to me. He was a pastor at four churches at the time because they kind of rotated. They didn't meet once a Sunday. I loved the opportunity to go with him to church if he was still alive, because I could. It just so much about my granddaddy that I admire.
Yeah.
I have a couple of friends who were been with me from my law practice all the way up to now. We still my former law partner. We still contact each other. We still talk. We still meet and eat. And other friends during the time I was practicing law, I would love to go to church with them. We all mm-hmm. can just sit down and talk. And I've had some amazing members of my church, males, deacons, trustees, that I would be very interested in just us just going, sitting down, talking.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a full pew of a lot of good guys to go to church with. I love that. Mm-hmm. All right, fun segment question number three, wrapping it up here. If you could give just one piece of advice to a younger man, okay, so think of like a teenager, let's say. Mm-hmm. So you're going to catch somebody further upstream, and it's just one piece of advice about living the life that you're living, you know, a humble, holy life of faith. In service to God, what would that one piece of advice be?
I give this to almost every person that I'm talking to when they're trying to move ahead and do the right thing. I tell them this. I say, stay focused and stay ethical.
Hmm.
I think if you do that, you can basically move ahead and do what you know you need to do. Most people get sidetracked. That's what I did, sidetracked. And then you start doing things you got no business doing. And that's where the ethics come in. So that's what I would tell them.
I love it. Focusing on ethics. Those are easy to remember. Not always easy to do, but easy to remember for sure. Well, James, Dr. James W. Smith, thank you so much for being here. Everybody who's out there, check out his podcast, the Deal By Me podcast, his books, Deal By Me and the second edition. Just thank you again, Dr. Smith, for everything you're doing out there and helping both men and women alike take advantage of their second and third chances out there.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Manna. If you have any questions or recommendations for future guests, send them to mannapodcast@gmail.com.